if you have... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, hold on.
Yeah. Yeah, no, so I think...
Director's cut.
Yeah, I think we've... So, I think we've...
Okay. You should put this in the beginning of the video.
Totally doing that. Yeah. All right, so in this episode, we have a very special guest, a good friend of mine. He's a magician. I think he also does mentalism, not sure. But I know him because he does, oh, he's nodding, so it's yes, he does do mentalism too. I know him more because of, we have conversations on hypnosis. So this podcast is all gonna be about hypnosis, and we're going to be demystifying it, giving some ideas out, and maybe some things that maybe you didn't know or maybe thought that it's not real. And you know, this guy's been he's a certified hypnotist from Vegas, so I know, I've seen his videos, he has videos all over social media hypnotizing people. He's really good. And our special guest today is Joshua Strongen, certified hypnotist, magician, and mentalist. What's up, Joshua?
Not too much. Stuck inside. I don't know what to call you now. I don't know whether to call you Rich or John or Richie Boy.
Oh, my God. That's from the old... just Rich is fine.
I kind of want to, like, call you Johnny Boy.
Oh, my... You know... So, Watkins calls me Richie Boy, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if you know that. Oh, you might have heard the podcast, but...
That's how I know it.
Yeah. Yeah, he calls me Johnny Boy. And it's basically, I guess, a nickname they made up, but, you know, whatever tickles your pickle. So yeah, tell everyone about who you are, how you got started in this. I'm excited for this podcast because I have a big passion for hypnosis. No one knows about that except my close friends. And there are certain people who don't believe that hypnosis is real until they've actually seen me do it to their own friends or family.
Yeah.
Right? Or I might have done that at a gig, but then sometimes they think that person I'm doing it to is a stooge or is acting. Right? So... I want to, I guess, get rid of, I'm not a certified hypnotist. You are. It's really expensive. That's why I don't want to pay for it. What's going to be cool about this podcast, too, is the fact that we have two different sides. You're certified. I'm self-taught, right? So I have tons of books, and I've learned a lot of the stuff from, you know, reputable people, and I've, you know, referenced it with you just to make sure, so you knew what I was talking about and not making stuff up. But also, you have the side of a certified training. Well, me, I guess you can say, learned from making a ton of mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right? I mean, I made my mistakes too.
yeah, because I think unlike...
I got some stories about that too.
Yeah, and I think unlike magic or any other thing, hypnosis is one of those things where you can't really practice it. Per se, you can't be in front of a mirror or go to your friend per se. Hey, can I try something out with you? Here, watch this, because there's nothing to see.
You can and you can't.
Exactly.
You can like do like the suggestibility tests or exercises, but then that's about it.
Yeah.
Like you can do a one-on-one suggestibility test, which for those of you who don't know, is pretty much just to gauge. Where someone is on a hypnotizability scale, and I put that in quotes because the suggestibility test doesn't really do too much. I mean, it helps a hypnotist more than anything figure out what, I guess, process to use to put someone into hypnosis. But and other than that,
I've read articles and. I should have done more research on this because I can't think of it right now. But I've read articles where there are some hypnotists who don't like the term suggestibility test, because a lot of what hypnosis is you're implying and you're presupposing, it's an NLP term, you're presupposing certain ideas in their head, right? So by claiming a suggestibility test, then at an unconscious level, you're kind of saying this may or may not work with you.
Yes. So, and I just use the term.
Yeah.
But I never say it when I'm doing it.
Because by using that, it kind of reduces this success of the quote unquote suggestibility test. But
yeah.
That's
why I always call it whenever I'm performing or doing it for like therapeutic purposes, I always just say exercise.
Cool. Yeah. And that's how I've heard it too to be used, because the exercise is, you know, you can't fail and you can't succeed it's an exercise. It just does.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, it just does what it does. Whatever that is, they don't know.
Exactly. Yeah. So let's go over, I guess let's get rid of some thoughts that people have on hypnosis. Because there's the group of people who don't believe in it. They think it's really stupid. Doesn't work. It's pointless. And I'm gonna say the hypnosis isn't real. And I've read research that is kind of true. That science can't figure out what hypnosis really is. Ooh, hello. But they do know something's going on. Correct.
Yes. Yeah. So, hypnosis is is accepted by the scientific community and medical community. So, both know that there is something going on. We don't 100% know exactly, in particular, what hypnosis is exactly. What it does do is unlocks the subconscious and is able to put your conscious mind and subconscious on the same path and level. When you see people doing this for entertainment, you see it in the sense of the stereotypical, which I hate, making them into a chicken. When you see this for therapy, you see it for example, helping someone get over a phobia.
Yeah, and that's one thing I get all the time from people who, when they hear that I've either done hypnosis before to somebody, or they've seen me do it, and they've heard it from a friend of mine. Oh, you got to see him do it. The fear is, oh, you're not gonna make me act like a chicken or anything like that, right? Mm-hmm. And it makes me upset, because they're only getting that because we've been conditioned as human beings, because the only time we've really seen a hypnotist, from what I've noticed whenever speaking to somebody, is a graduation from high school or college or beginning of college or, you know, graduation of any type. There's always a hypnotist, right, that comes in and does a hypnosis show, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what they're used to seeing. They don't know about the other side, which is clinical hypnotherapy, which is kind of how it all started. Or if you want to go further back to mesmerism, what's it called?
Mesmerism.
And again, that was still being used for quote unquote clinical to help people. Yeah. It was never a form of entertainment. Right. So let's go over the whole idea of the difference between a clinical hypnotherapist and a hypnotist for entertainment.
Mm-hmm. So the first thing that people need to know is that the hypnotic state itself is no different. It's when you do this for entertainment, they're in the same state that they're in when you do this for hypnotherapy. Or rather, let's put this way, they can be, they do not have to be. Because there's waking state of hypnosis as well, where your eyes are open, you're awake, and you're you're always conscious. Sometimes your eyes are just closed. And we call that, quote unquote, sleep hypnosis. But you're always aware. You're not passed out. You're not blacked out. You can move. You can respond and everything. Everyone thinks the complete opposite, but that's a different state. That's called death. And we don't condone that.
Things got dark real fast. just FYI, because we're using Zoom and we're not upgraded, it's supposed to end in about 8 minutes. So at about 2 minutes, I might cut to a little commercial break, and then we'll switch platforms and try to get into Skype. Mm. Cool. So, yeah. So basically, waking hypnosis, what you said, it looks like they're completely awake, but they're not on a conscious, unconscious level, correct?
On
meaning
they aren't. No, they are and they aren't.
Exactly.
Because you can give them the suggestion to,
but they look
not
awake.
Remember.
Yeah, but yeah, they look awake. Awake. Meaning like right now, I'm
their conscious mind is their subconscious is awake. Because what you're doing when you hypnotize someone in their, whether they're in a waking state or not waking state, is their imagination lies in the subconscious. So mm-hmm. their imagination wakes up and comes out to play. And that kind of takes over and overrides the conscious mind.
What's the whole idea when people say, can you hypnotize someone even if they say no? In hypnosis, that's kind of what we call a resistant subject.
Yeah, there are techniques for that. Sometimes the hypnotist, though, that they saw before just sucks. And there's too many of those. Funny enough, my girlfriend actually went to a hypnosis show a while ago, I guess, and she did stuff. She did like the suggestibility test and it didn't work for her, or she didn't go under hypnosis, rather. And then I hypnotized her for the first time in like, what, maybe 2-3 minutes.
Yeah.
So I mean, like she was under the impression that she couldn't be hypnotized, and I met other people who said that they can't be hypnotized, or just saying like, you can hypnotize him but you can't hypnotize me, and then down they go.
So
and there are different techniques.
Yeah, so in hypnosis there are two forms of hypnosis. There's the 90% of what people see as hypnosis, which is what we call direct suggestion or direct hypnosis, where you're kind of giving them the suggestion and going through the whole process. And then there's the whole indirect, right? The more subtle type of hypnosis. What's the difference?
Well, that gets into NLP a little bit. So NLP is neuro-linguistic programming. Basically, the building blocks of how to win friends and influence people.
Okay. And just FYI, for everyone listening to this, this is conversation, even though he is certified, a lot of what we say sometimes, there's a lot of people who are against everything we say. So just as an FYI, it is our opinion. Also, yeah,
and also please don't like just listen to this and then, oh, I'm gonna hypnotize people.
Yeah, yeah. Everything in this episode is all our opinion. If we are giving you techniques, it's, you know, he's a certified, he does it with actual clients. I've done it with people.
Your research, do your homework, contact professionals and state laws as well.
Just a disclaimer.
Sorry.
So
it's an extra disclaimer.
Yeah. So the NLP stuff, a lot of people say it's fake, right? Like it's just not, doesn't, it's nothing. Like, but a lot of the techniques in there come from a mix of sources, but mainly from a guy named Milton Erickson, if I'm correct, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And the guy who came up.
Erickson and Freud.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Freud. Yeah, they knew each other.
Oh, cool. I didn't know that. They were friends, buddies, best buds.
Yeah. Even though, you know, everyone like hated Freud.
For those of you who don't know, if you look up NLP, it's called neuro-linguistic programming. If using language, I guess, so to speak, or to try to figure out
using language patterns,
the process of the brain and stuff like that, and all that.
Yeah,
you can kind of see it as, like you said, how to win friends and influence people. right? Yeah. But the more technical aspect of it. The reason people say it's fake is because, in my opinion, it is. NLP isn't real, right? It's a made-up title. And how this happened, and you can research this, I saw this somewhere. It was a guy named Richard Bandler, right? He's very, very popular. He's considered like the guy who, he basically invented NLP, but he didn't come up with the techniques. He was obsessed with a guy of the hypnotist, Milton Erickson, and he wanted to learn the techniques and then publish it in a source for people to go to. And if Richard Bandler hears this, correct me if I'm wrong, but I heard in a podcast or in an interview somewhere that you had, that he had, that said that how he came up with the title was he was driving in a car, got pulled over, cop asked him, what is that on the floor? It's a bunch of books and stuff and papers and everything. And he's like, what are you writing? What are you doing? And in the moment, he just said, because he knew he wasn't going to understand, he's like, oh, it's a neuro-linguistic programming. And ever since then, that title stuck, right? So it's a funny story. And again, if it's completely wrong, that story, Bandler, if you're hearing this, let me know. So for now, we're going to take a little quick break, and we'll be right back. So yeah, so basically, NLP is, some people don't believe in it, some people do. A lot of it isn't 100% to my knowledge. Like the whole thing with eye accessing cues, I've heard doesn't work the way it says it does, in the sense of that every single person always is gonna look to the top and to the right for, you know, to remember something like that. Because everyone's a little different. So it's and for those of you who don't know, what is eye accessing cues?
I mean, you know more about that than me, because I don't really
do use
that
stuff. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really use that stuff too much.
Oh, okay, cool. So
because of that reason.
yeah, because it's not foolproof. So yeah. Think of the last time that you heard your favorite song. And as you do this, look at yourself in the mirror. Or just record yourself, because you won't be aware of you. And then when you're done, play it back and watch your eyes. They say that your everyone's eyes move in a certain direction depending on how you're retrieving information, right?
Yeah. What it does do, though, every time, when they take that moment to think about it, if you were to do like a shock induction or something,
yeah,
they would go under, most likely.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Because it's a very light, because every day where our brain waves are in beta state, and then they go into when you go into a deeper state of hypnosis, it goes into alpha, and then delta and theta, and so it lightly goes in between for that moment, beta and alpha.
Okay.
Because you're taking that moment to think about it, and you're like, huh. So like if I like you said, favorite song, like that's such a big question to ask, even though it seems so simple.
Yeah.
So people have to think about it. In that moment, they're accessing a lot of information in their mind.
And basically what they're saying is you're accessing, if you look at someone's eyes and you ask them certain questions and you look at their eyes, you can kind of tell where, which part of the brain they're accessing that information from.
Yeah.
That's the assumption.
And I don't know how true that is exactly.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's really proven that. And again, if listeners out there know more about this than us, because again, I'm self-taught, I'm not certified, this is just, I just like talking about this stuff.
I'm certified, but I don't know everything.
Yeah, you don't know everything either. There's people out there who know more than us. But yeah, if you do, you know, send us a message, and we'll talk. So NLP is hypnosis techniques, a little bit of psychology, a little bit of social engineering, we can say, right?
Yeah. And you have a great story about that I love.
Which one?
when you went for your job interview.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Should I tell that story real quick?
That story, but you should probably do a short version. Because
yeah, I'll do a short version.
I feel like that'll take, like...
That'll take this whole thing. That'll be this whole episode. Okay.
That's so great.
So real quick. So when I was getting into the whole area of hypnosis and discovered like NLP and stuff, I did massive research. And it came across a lot of crap, right? At first, it sounded cool on paper, but when you're watching it being done, you're like, that looks stupid. That does not work. Right? Because I'm also a big skeptic, right? I'm like, that does not work. Right?
And there's a lot of bullshit out there.
Yeah, too. Yeah. And there's a lot of guys out there who claim they know it, and they really don't, you know? At least from what it looks like to me. I'm not there, so I can't really say much. But that's just my opinion. One day, I read somewhere of this guy. I found a video on YouTube, and he claimed in the video that he has a technique to, apparently, that you can use these quote unquote techniques to get a job at an interview without ever showing your resume. And I'm like, that sounds like crap, but I have to watch this because the title sounds awesome. All right, because if this works, this sounds cool. And he does this, I guess, mock demonstration. And again, I can't verify if it's real or not. I'm just going based off what I saw. But the idea behind it makes sense. And the whole idea is basically you want to build rapport with the person you're interviewing you for the job, right? And then once you build that rapport, and you have to learn, and the cool thing about NLP is you learn about how to build rapport. A lot of it's about building rapport and better communicating with people. So it's I don't want anyone to hear this and think that any of these techniques are for manipulation whatsoever, because it's not, right? A lot of it is just to improve yourself as a human being to, in my opinion, to better be a better communicator with your family, friends, co-workers, you know, so you could fully understand what might be going on in their mind and then adapt to that so you could better understand each other. Would you agree or disagree?
I would both. And the great reason both is because
in the wrong hands it could be manipulation.
Well, no, in the right hands it's even manipulation is such a dirty word because we give it such a dirty connotation, but when you're it's not itself negative. Manipulation.
The stigma around it, yeah.
Yeah, manipulation itself can be positive or negative.
That's true. Yes. Yeah. But in general, in my opinion, I would say you just become a better communicator.
Yeah. Understanding.
Understanding of yourself. A lot of it's just for self-development, right? Because I feel if you understand yourself better, you understand how your brain works, how you process information. In NLP, they have something called like meta programs, and where you kind of like, everyone has a way of processing their view of the outside world, of reality. That's their view because that's based on what's the filters in your head that you grew up with and that was placed into you. So your view is what you see in your head of what reality is compared to someone else's view and how they see reality because of what's going on in their head. This job interview, to go back to that, I needed a job. I was in Manhattan, I was walking around, and I wasn't looking for a job. I was bored at home and I wanted to go out and walk around and just get some air. It was like summertime, and I'm walking around, and basically someone sent me a message that said, hey, I know you're probably looking for a job. I don't know if you still are, but this hotel is hiring. I'm not going to say the hotel's name. All right. But it was a very nice hotel, very high end. And I get there and I was like, holy crap, I'm not prepared for this. I don't have a resume on me. I'm not dressed appropriately. Like I should at least be wearing a blazer. Right. I wasn't. I was wearing a button down shirt and jeans. And semi sneakers, kind of look like sneakers, but they weren't. And I was unshaved. But basically, I'm like, oh, you know, I might just email them, my friend, and I read the ad for it, and it's only today. right? So I'm like, crap, I do need a job. Let me just go. I mean, because if I don't have a resume, they usually give you an application that you basically write out your resume on there, which is kind of redundant. It's annoying, right? But you have to do it. So you write out your resume on there anyways. You pass 3 jobs and this and that and where you work. So I figured that'll be my resume. I'll use that as my resume. So I get there, I walk in, and everyone's in a suit, right? Because this is like a really nice hotel. It's like really well known. So everyone's in a suit. Even the people who greet you at the entrance are very, like, professional. They're like, oh, hello, sir. Are you here for the interview or are you here to check in? I'm like, I'm here for the interview. And he looked at me up and down. I swear to God, he did this. He looked at me up and down. I was like, oh, okay. I'm like, I know I'm not dressed for this, but can I at least apply? I just discovered this now, and I live in Jersey. I didn't want to go to Jersey and come back again. He's like, yeah, sure, whatever, right? Because I guess they legally can't deny you, right? Yeah. So, yeah, it was an open interview. So I go in, they gave me an application. Everyone's in a suit, people with suitcases and crap. It's crazy. I'm the only guy who could literally, is a sore thumb in the whole group. You could just point me out. To make a long story short, it was an all-day interview. They do group interviews. There were probably, I would say, maybe 50 of us, right? And you would do these group interviews, and then they would make you wait while, I guess, they sift through all everyone's, I guess, when they have their meeting real quick, and they narrow it down, right? So I was there probably, like, at maybe 12, and then I didn't finish until, like, I was maybe 5 p.m. It was long, because you would have these group interviews, and I hate group interviews. Like, I don't know how you are, but I hate group interviews.
I hate interviews. Any kind of interview.
Yeah.
So, I hate this, Rich.
But this is fun, okay? I'm not interviewing you for a job. But basically, okay, so I'm in this interview. I'm sitting down and this group interviews. And in my mind, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to try something. I have nothing to lose. I'm going to try to use these techniques that I know and see if they really work. Now, I did everything to what they call matching and mirroring, right? Which they teach this a lot. This I know for a fact, they teach a lot of this in sales, but in also in like small group dynamic exercises and communication classes and all that stuff on mirroring your subject, which basically kind of, sometimes they misinterpret it in a sense of that you're mimicking their movements, which isn't true because I've done that when I first learned it and I get caught and then you look weird. People look at you weird, right? So don't do that. It's supposed to be subtle, right? But the whole point of it is if you watch a group of friends hanging out, you'll notice that everyone's body language kind of matches each other, right? So that's basically matching and mirroring when people are in sync. If everyone's kind of looking the same physically, how their body movements are, it basically means they're mirroring each other at an unconscious level, which is why they're hanging out, because they're friends, right? And it builds that rapport. So that's one technique to build rapport with someone really, really fast. Trust me, this works, and it works very well.
If you do it well,
don't be weird like me. And literally sat in front of my friend while she was eating in high school, and literally every time she picked up her milk carton, I drank my milk carton. Every time she like touched her forehead, I touched my forehead. And she looked at me and said, "What the hell are you doing? Why are you copying everything I'm doing?" And I was like, "Yeah, that's not the
point." It's a very common mistake that people make when they're dating is doing that. Oh, yeah, this is a big technique that people teach people for dating.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them teach it wrong, and a lot of them do it wrong because of that.
Yeah, it's not about overtly doing it like that at all. It's even about, like, how you speak to them and, you know, all that stuff. It's a lot of other things, which we won't go into. That's a whole different episode. But the whole point, look at a matching and mirroring. If you do it well, then you can build rapport with someone really fast, and who knows, they might be your next best friend. Back to my story at the hotel. So I'm in these group interviews, and I know I have to build rapport with these managers who are interviewing us, right? So I would do that. I would try to pinpoint, because you know, in every group, there's always an alpha person. There's always one alpha person in every group, right? So I had to figure out who was the alpha person in that group. One way was to see which direction all the other managers in that group were looking at to that one person, right? Because then that would tell me this person might be the alpha male, so I'm going to focus on this person, because it's going to come down to either consensus among them or that one person has the final answer and who continues on to the next interview, right? So I had to match my body language to his, right? Or whenever one of the managers would ask me a question, I would match their body language while talking to them, right? Just so that, and then it's weird, and I'm sure you've seen this, you can feel the difference, right? When you're connecting with someone using this stuff, you just know at some level you're somehow connecting, right?
Yeah, that goes into something that's energy-based that we can talk about a little later, but...
yeah, this might be a long podcast. So I use these techniques in the group interviews, right? But what I'm also listening for is what everyone else is saying, because I noticed one thing that people do in these group interviews is they'll repeat what everyone else says if the manager agreed with that one person, right? Or if they laughed, they'll repeat it. I didn't want to do that either. I was looking at to see, there's one question I learned in sales. I used to sell life insurance.
You did this in every interview.
I did. But wait. I did this once I understood how it worked. You can use this in anything, and it's crazy how effective this is. And there's different articles on it and different other people's ideas and tips on it, but there's all different names here. But this is the gist. This is the gist, okay? So in sales, just to give you a background, the salesperson will always ask you one question that kind of is in the form of they make you list something. So in sales, when I used to sell life insurance, the one question we were told to ask, which was kind of the most important question out of the whole presentation that we used to do, which was because I used to do financial services, right? So we would ask them at some point in the presentation, or I think it was before the presentation, we would ask them if assuming you had all the money in the world. So here, I'll do it with you, okay, so people can hear how this works. So Joshua, assuming you had all the money in the world, right? I came here, I gave you a check that says all the money in the world, right?
It says all the money in the world.
That's literally what it says, all the money in the world.
Okay.
what three things would you do with that money?
World peace.
World peace. Okay, what else?
Take care of my parents and family in general.
Okay, and another one?
Save it.
Save it.
Save it and invest.
Save and invest. So you said world peace, take care of your parents, and save and invest.
Yeah.
Right? So those three things that you just told me, right, are things that excite you, right? My next question would really be a follow-up. Be like, out of those three things, which one can you do immediately?
Family.
Family. Okay. So now I know that's your number one priority, right? And then, of course, I would provide you with more information. But now, keep in mind, now I know that's your what we call hot button, right? Yep. Or like your trigger, right? So now I would present my presentation around family. Understanding this question, I went on this interview at the hotel and I would ask the managers, because everyone knows this. If you've been on an interview, they always ask you, hey, before we start to interview, do you have any questions? Or when the interview ends, do you have any questions? I always have a question. So, you know what? Out of curiosity, Joshua, you know, I know you've been working in this hotel for so long. How do you know when you've had, you know, because I've never been on your side. I've never been a hiring person. I think it's really interesting that you have to go through all these people, right? And they'll say, oh, yeah, no, it's pretty crazy, too. It's like, oh, I'm building rapport, right? I'm speaking their language. And then my follow-up would be, once I got that, I say, how do you know you've had the right person in front of you? And they always look at me confused, which is what we would call a trance state, right? Because now I've broken their pattern, right? Threw them off completely, And I say, how do you know when you're interviewing so many employees, how do you know you found the right person in front of you? Just, you know, just out of curiosity. Only once or twice have I had one, the hiring person, throw me off completely and say, why are you asking? That's a weird question. No one has ever asked that type of question before. And I was like, well, you know, I'm just curious, right? Because, you know, maybe one day I always wanted to be a hiring person, like own my own company. So I wanted to know just what it's like. Right. And I'm giving off that impression like it's just like a side thing. I don't really care, but it's very important. See, if you look at the question, how do you know when you found the right person in front of you? Right. Goes back to the same thing with the car. How do you know when you have the right car? Right. And you would list these things. They're going to list these qualities of the right employee. Right. Now, if you're a hiring manager and you're listening to this, I'm sure you have similar questions that you do with employees as well, where that you would ask or hire people that you're interviewing as well, where, you know, you have these questions where they kind of answer certain things. I did this in these interviews. I did it with every single manager at the hotel, right? And then I would use what we call in magic time delay to make them forget that I asked that question at the very beginning, so that by the time, it really only takes like 5-10 minutes for them to forget. So that by the time when it comes to me and they ask that one question that they ask in every interview, why should we hire you? Guess what I'm going to say? And I did that with every manager. And it was a 5-hour interview. And every person made me go through to the next round. Right? I ended up getting hired at this hotel without a resume, in jeans, unshaved, and a button-down shirt. I got fired 3-4 months later. That's a whole different story. But till this day, I've always wondered if it was because of the techniques that I did, right? And it wasn't until the day I got fired where the managers who interviewed me during the process, who brought me in to fire me, literally said to me, and I quote, Richard, you must have hypnotized us or tricked us into hiring you. We literally have been sitting around talking about you because we don't know how we hired you, but you got us to hire you. And ever since that day and that comment, I smiled back and I said, if you only knew. And of course, I never told them, but that was proof to me that maybe it was because of that, those techniques. Right. But at the same time, I feel interviews, it's really when they bring you in for an interview. And the reason for this, I say it worked, is because I'm a complete stranger walking in from the street. Right. It's different if you've applied for the job already and they're calling you in. That means they're interested in you. Right. So, and I know this is not really on hypnosis, but it is, because the techniques are very similar to hypnosis, but it's kind of what you said earlier, it's more of the indirect, yeah. Right? It's very subtle.
This would fall under a conversational hypnosis.
Yeah. And that's where I learned all this stuff, because it's all about, and I was very curious on what conversational hypnosis was. And it's really all in what we call the pre-talk in hypnosis. So yeah, that's a quick story of that process. But to finish up that story, I feel that it's really all about your personality. Like, if you can go in faking that you're happy and you're approachable and you attract positive energy, you have a higher chance of someone hiring you just because they feel like they like you. Their work environment, if they know that you're not going to be a problematic person.
Yeah, definitely. For those of you who don't believe in energy, you don't know what you're talking about. And the reason is because we are is energy, when you really get down to it.
We all what?
All we are is energy. So think of it this way. When I talk to someone who's like a real like scientific and stuff, and like doesn't like believe in metaphysical stuff, and I'm iffy on some of that myself.
Yeah, me too.
Think of it this way. Our brain controls our body. Mm-hmm. It does things consciously and unconsciously for us, like heartbeat, breathing, stuff like that. just unconsciously, like, picking up a deck of cards. All our brain is doing is sending down electrical signals all through our body. Electricity is energy.
Yeah.
So, what if we could manipulate that energy? And that, again, also falls under hypnosis. Because when you go into that hypnotic state, you can manipulate and change that energy.
Yeah, and people who meditate a lot, they don't realize that meditation is hypnosis.
Yeah.
Right. People who I've spoken to and I've had talk conversation about, because they ask me, you know, is hypnosis real? Is it really a thing? I'm like, well, what do you, just out of curiosity, what you're asking? Oh, well, you know, I do a lot of meditation and stuff, but I don't really believe in hypnosis. I'm like, well, that's contradicting. And they're like, what do you mean? Because you already are doing hypnosis. Is that a train near you?
Yeah.
Cool. Train. Oh, wait. Okay. So,
No, it's going to get louder.
Oh, is it?
For a second. Unless that's the last.
So people who meditate, I tell them, who don't believe in hypnosis, I'm like, well, you meditate, right? And they're like, yeah. So you've experienced it already. And they're like, what do you mean? Or just meditation in general. Anywhere. If you're at a class or a studio, there's always someone who's giving you these meditative instructions, right? Those instructions are hypnotic because you need to relax your mind, right? That is hypnosis. You just call it meditation, but it's the same exact thing, right? The only difference is no one's going to tell you there. You can kind of say it's for therapy in that case because you're meditating. But no one's going to tell you, when you wake up, you won't remember your name. Or when you wake up, you're going to act like, Michael Jackson or something, right? They're just going to give you positive thoughts and this and that and help you relax and de-stress. What about the people who claim that, in hypnosis, there's, how do I explain this? There's something what we call somnambulists,
yeah.
Right? Would you say there's different levels that people could go under?
Yes.
And this could be either in meditation or when you're being hypnotized or whatever, so to speak.
The answer is yes. There are definitely different levels. I think that it also depends on the hypnotist and the subject themselves, because there are people, I was just talking with someone not too long ago, actually, who took a course. I don't remember the name of the student, but they were in a city. And the hypnotist who was teaching the class was Carlos Pruitt, or Mr. P. And after the guy completed his course, he went out with Mr. P to do street hypnosis. And Mr. P tried to hypnotize someone, didn't do it, moved on. And then he hypnotized someone and he turned around and the guy that he couldn't hypnotize, his student hypnotized. So I would say that it comes down to the person and the rapport and how comfortable they are and the environment.
I think if you're going to get into hypnosis or learn about it, it really, you can learn everything, but if you don't have the confidence or
at least yeah, make it.
Exactly, if you don't have the confidence to do it, it's already just the thought that you think it's not going to work because you're scared or nervous, it's not going to work because you've already failed, unless you get really lucky and the person you're speaking to is highly suggestible. Right. Yeah. But hypnosis, I think people who want to build confidence, it is a good area to study, because even if you don't do it for fun, but you learn a little bit, just to do it, you have to at least fake being confident.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's really all about that. If you don't have the confidence, it's not going to work. So at least fake it. And by doing that so many times, if you're faking your confidence so many times, you know what's going to happen. You've now convince yourself that you're confident. You're a confident person. Just benefits all around.
Yeah. I mean, I remember when I hypnotized my first two people at a party. I just had to fake being confident, fake that I did it a million times before.
Yeah.
They didn't know anything otherwise.
Yeah.
And I wished I was having fun. It was amazing. Inside, I was freaking out. I was like, this is ridiculous and crazy. And when I, to this day, they don't know that that was the first time I hypnotized people.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think it's something that you kind of have to, like anything, keep active in and keep doing.
Yeah, even the techniques you learn in it, you don't have to go around just be hypnotizing people, but it helps you as a person, you know, because you learn how to read people, right? Because you have to learn how to know when someone is quote unquote zoning out while you're doing the induction, right? And induction, we mean like putting them under a quote unquote sleep state.
Yeah, into hypnosis.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whether it be waking or not waking.
So what do you do?
Right now I'm doing more therapy because, you know, we're stuck inside. I'm doing Zoom sessions and sessions over Messenger and Skype. When it was pre-COVID, I was out there. I was doing some street hypnosis.
And street hypnosis is kind of a new thing the past few years, right? Because it's, you know how people were doing like what they call street magic because of David Blaine and everything,
yeah. Right?
Hypnotists were going out and be like, hey, if he can do magic, I can go around hypnotizing random people. It's not like someone's going around and just saying sleep, sleep, and everyone's just dropping, right? It's like
sometimes it is,
but you're still asking for permission.
Right? Oh yeah,
you're still being like, hey, you know. I'm a hypnotist. I'm, you know, just for fun. You know, you ever been hypnotized? Like, no, ever wanted to? He's like, yeah, sure. I want to try it out. Yeah, sure. And then you go ahead and do it. Basically, just going up to random strangers, kind of like a magician does in the street, and be like, hey, want to see a trick?
Yep. Yeah. It's always with permission, and you always get that consent from people, and they all have their differences.
Yeah, and the one that everyone knows about is the entertainment.
Certain stereotypical things have gotten stuck in people's mind from it.
Mm-hmm.
For example, chickens.
I
hate it.
It had to be from like a movie or TV show.
It had to be from a movie or a TV show, or like this one guy did it and then they were like, it like just spread like wildfires. I don't know. I want that bit to die.
Yeah. One of the fears is if you're hypnotized, you have full control of the person, which to a degree you have, that's not really true, right?
To a certain extent.
Yeah.
If I were to hypnotize a subambulist, and a subambulist is someone who goes into hypnosis like that, I could give them the suggestion, let's say, whenever someone says their name, they jump up and down three times or do jumping jacks for 3 seconds. That trigger, if I don't take it away, could stay.
Because I've read that, technically speaking, it can never stick. It just kind of works as a it'll be there for some time. Of course, not forever, but like only for like a few days, and little by little, it'll just like dissipate and just go away on its own. That's a suggestion.
It also depends on if the conscious mind is able to override the subconscious in that way, which is hard to do because the subconscious has things we aren't even aware of, and so it could potentially lock that away so you don't remember it.
Yeah, people say, what are the side effects of hypnosis? The only side effects, like, you can't get stuck in hypnosis.
Yeah, again, that's, like I said at the beginning, the that's a different state. It's death.
Yeah, if you're stuck, you're not waking up, you're dead. Which is of course not going to happen with hypnosis because it's just a different altered state of mind. Which reminds me of another story of, I tell you about the one in college, I thought the girl got stuck for real.
Oh yes, yeah, and then she
okay.
fell asleep.
Just so everyone knows. Another quick story, just to prove a point. I was just getting into hypnosis. I was in college. I went to Drew University, and
look who's all fancy going to college.
What?
Look who's all fancy going to college.
Yeah, it's all right. And everyone knew me there as the guy who does magic, and I was just getting into hypnosis. I was going around just hypnotizing my friends for fun, right? Just for practice. It was my practice ground. And I had a friend that I hypnotized once. It was on my floor, my dorm, and a lot of the people there heard that I was going to hypnotize someone, so they all wanted to see because they'd never seen it. And they're like, cool, yeah, show us. So I go to my friend, hypnotizer, everyone's watching, and I gave her a suggestion to, you know, the whole thing of, like, you know, count down 100 backwards in your head, and every time the lower that number goes, the more deeper you go, you know, whatever it is you want to say. Yeah, get the almond. And so I did that to her for one reason, right? Because I wanted her to keep doing that, because I was going to go walk a few feet outside of her dorm to my dorm to get a Gatorade because I was thirsty. And I didn't want her to not do anything, right? So I figure it gives me enough time for her to go deeper while I'm not there, and then come back and I can just do my thing. Right. So I left, got my Gatorade, came back. I swear to you, it's probably like less than 5 seconds, right? Because it was only like three doors down. Came back. I'm giving these suggestions now, and everyone's watching. Like maybe six people are watching, and none of it's working. All the basic stuff wasn't working, right? So I'm like, this is weird. None of the stuff is working, and it worked before. So I'm like, you know what? Let me just wake her up, and not do anything. Right, I'm just wake her out of it. So I do the whole reverse hypnosis to wake them up, right? And that wasn't working. She wasn't waking up. And people are like, dude, why is she not waking up? She's supposed to wake up, right? And they would shake her too, and she's just like, her body's just like there, and she's like, no, it's okay. And I'm like, she's mumbling and crap, and I was like, the hell? So they come to me because obviously I'm supposed to be the expert. Right? Of course.
I mean, out of everyone in that dorm, I guess you are.
Yeah, I guess so. But in my mind, guys, don't worry. It's totally fine. This happens every time. It's completely normal. But you know what? Hold on a second. I'll be right back. Just watch her, okay? I'll be right back. I ran to my dorm room, opened my laptop up, went on Google, and I literally typed, can someone get stuck in hypnosis? And then, you know, I came across some articles that said, you know, they can, it's impossible, right? So what had happened was the time that I left to get my son to drink while she was doing the whole reverse counting in her head to go deeper, I didn't know this, but apparently if you stop talking to their brain for a certain amount of time, for some people, depending on the person, the brain might be like, you know, there's no stimulus. They're not hearing anything anymore. So the brain's going to be like, well, I guess this is over, but I kind of feel good right now. I think I'm going to just take a nap. And that's exactly what happened. I was gone for like less than 5 seconds, but because I wasn't giving constant suggestions or constant instructions, her brain just said, which normally they would just wake up. In her case, she was just so comfortably happy in that relaxed state that her body and her brain was like, you know what, I think it's just time for a nap. And she went into a natural state of a nap. She went to sleep on her own. And when I went back, I'm like, guys, don't worry, she's totally fine. She's just napping right now. She'll wake up on her own. And, you know, 30 minutes later, she woke up and she was totally fine, right? She remembers everything. She just went to sleep on her own. So yes, you can't get stuck. Either two things will happen. One, you'll wake up on your own. Or two, you'll go to sleep and then wake up on your own.
So either way, you'll wake up.
Either way, you'll wake up. So yes, for those of you who think you get stuck, don't worry, you're fine. That was a fun experience for me because I was panicking.
Yeah, that's like your horror story.
It was for a few seconds when it was happening, because I'm like, this is, oh my God, she's actually stuck. This is... Yeah. My worst fear has happened.
I have a horror story.
Oh, which
is starting out. Oh, it was bad. It wasn't good. I learned my lesson since then. So I used to do a bit when I was doing street hypnosis and stage hypnosis, where I have people stand up and be stuck to the floor with their feet, and they can't move from that spot. And I take out a dollar. I take like 5 or 6 steps back. I take out a dollar bill, and I say, if you can take the dollar from my hand, you can have it. And it's to show people that money isn't really that big a motivator. Because if it were, they would be able to just take their feet and walk right over and take the dollar bills.
So you're more like a demonstration on, I guess, motivation.
Yeah. And they're not able to do it. Okay. So I take out a 20. Try again. Not able to do it. I take out my debit card. And I say, if you can reach me, then you can have my debit card. This never happened. And since then, I learned my lesson. I know exactly how to avoid this situation now. I either avoid it by different wording, or I just don't do it. But what ended up happening in one case was they were standing and they really wanted it, apparently. But they can't move. And so she jumped.
Wait, what?
Because the jumping comes mostly from the hips, she tried to jump up and her body went up because of the hips. But because she was stuck, her mind was like, my feet are stuck, I can't move. She fell and face planted.
What?
She didn't have a bloody nose, nothing was broken or whatnot, but she did face plant, which I was like, well, that's really, really bad. I know not to do that again. Luckily, she was in hypnosis, so I was able to kind of take any pain away or whatnot. The techniques I know, but
she upset.
She was a little shaken up for a moment because it was like, why did that happen? I guess.
Yeah.
So I learned my lesson from that one. That was from when I was early on starting with hypnosis. That's probably one of the only horror stories I have with hypnosis, really.
That's worse than mine.
The only reason I'm saying it is because, like, that was within, like, I don't know, when I was just starting out and learned my lesson from that.
I mean, that's just bad. I mean, mine was just more like I just didn't know that much yet. Now, you know, that was like, man, when was I in college? It was 2006. Holy crap. That was a long-ass time ago.
I've done that bit before that a bunch of times, and that's never happened before, so it never even crossed my mind.
I mean, that's like trying to jump. That's the thing with hypnosis too, is you don't know what's gonna happen.
Yeah, you don't know what's gonna happen. Whereas when you do magic, most of the time you know the end result.
Yeah, you have some sort of control of the outcome because you're controlling the outcome. Hypnosis, you have an outcome. You just, what makes the entertainment side of it funny is the random things people do.
Oh yeah, I showed you a video last night of the random things people do. That.
Oh man, that was hilarious. Yeah, like that's why there's hypnosis for entertainment, because it's the hypnotist really doesn't, like, they have routines, like, you know, little things for people to do, but they don't really know. Like, the routine would be something like, you know, for the next 5 minutes, I'm gonna have people play, you know, be like a superstar in a dance contest. But that's it. They don't know what they're gonna do, you know, because I've seen videos, and I've been on an actual, like, live hypnosis shows in Vegas where they have to sometimes tell some of these, because there's an old stunt, you know, where they would say, you know, and imagine it's like 100 degrees, and all of a sudden people start taking off their clothes and crap, right? And it's hilarious, people love it. But sometimes some people try to go a little crazy and they start going, like, taking off of more than what they're supposed to. And then the hypnotist runs, like, no, no, that's fine. You can leave that on.
Yeah.
Now, jumping into the clinical side, since you do that too, what kind of things have you, what kind of people have you worked with? Like, what kind of, situations?
Oh, well, before that, let me tell one story real quick. about.
Oh, okay.
Because there's a really good one that I do have. Example, actually, of stuff that you can't write in a script, or like things just happen. And it's really great. It just happened to work out. So I do a bit where I have people, I have a toilet paper roll, and each ply is like a $100 bill. Mm-hmm. And they have to like take the $100 bills and hide them on their person. So I have like 30 people lined up. They're all trying to take plies of toilet paper, which they think are $100 bills. They hide them on their person and whatnot. And it's a funny bit. I put it to the side and let it be the bit it is. And at the end, what usually happens is, why do I have toilet paper in my pocket and stuff? Now, after that bit, I do what's called, I call it a superhero. And I have them be a superhero, but not a typical cool superhero like the Flash or Superman, but something ridiculous and made up and useless. But they think it's the best superhero in the world. So I go down 30 people. I get to the very last person, and I hypnotized this girl before, and she was great, and this just made it that much greater for me. She said, "I'm the money finder."
What?
And I was so happy she said that, because everyone still had their toilet paper on them. And so I said, "Everyone else is back to normal, but you are still the money finder on three. 1, 2, 3. And she opened her eyes, and I said, "So you're the money finder, right? It's okay. You can tell me. They can't hear us. Which one of them has the money? They stole money. You see the roll of money and how little there is. Who stole it?" And she pointed to one person.
What?
And she pointed to one person and was very adamant about it and saying, "He stole it. He stole the money. They like started chasing each other for a moment. And I stopped that because limitations and boundaries and stuff.
Yeah.
And you never know, like, because safety is a big portion of hypnosis.
And training?
Yep. That's why I stopped.
So when it comes to NLP, right, there is something called eye accessing cues, right? And I have a book on me. It's called Neurolinguistic for Dummies, because it just makes things easier for me to understand. Not that I'm saying I'm dumb, but I'm just saying, like, because I've read the other books that have this, and sometimes they get into they get too wordy and too busy with terms and a bunch of stuff that I'm like, dude, just get straight to the point. And the Dummies books, if anyone has these, I'm pretty sure they can say that it's great, because they get straight to the point. There's none of this extra bit of information, which is why I love this book. So, in this book, there is a part all about eyes, and I just want to mention for the people. So, basically, depending where your eyes move, they're claiming that you're processing information, getting information in different parts of the brain, depending on where your eyes move, right? So, I'm just going to read this right off the book. So if you ask someone a question, almost every single time, watch their eyes are going to move in a certain direction, right? But again, this information isn't 100%, because I think you and I agree it's not 100%. It's been proven that it's not 100%.
Yeah.
Because everyone is different. So, but as a basis, they claim that if that person's eyes move to the top and to the right, it's you're constructing a memory, okay? If you're moving from the top and to the left, you're remembering something. If it's to the left, it's an auditory memory that you're saying. So something that has to do with sound, right? And then to the right, it's you're constructing something. So maybe you're making up a sound, or you have to reconstruct it. So if they're moving left to right, you're probably reconstructing a sound that you haven't heard, or maybe you don't know how the sound works, but you're trying to make it up, right? And then kinesthetically, so basically tactile memory, I guess it would be, right? It would be down and to the right. And then down and to the left is more like an internal dialogue that you're having with yourself. And I'm just going based off the book here, but you guys can research that. It's really interesting information. And like you said, with hypnosis, it does help understand how people may be responding to some of the stuff that you're doing, right? I've come across this trying to do more research on eye movements, and it's something called EMDR, right, from psychotherapy, basically to handle a PTSD, right? You've heard of this? You don't do this, though.
I mean, I do. I just don't do it with the equipment that other people use for it.
Yeah, because there's equipment and stuff, right? I've seen videos of therapists doing it on people with PTSD, and all they're doing is they're either using a pencil or their fingers to follow in a certain pattern. I don't know what those techniques are, though. That's like way above my pay grade. Yeah. There's obviously something going on with that type of information, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's like when... So hypnotists do something called instant inductions, which means that we have inductions, the process of putting someone into hypnosis, a standard induction, which is usually a little drawn out, maybe like 15 minutes at the most, 15, I would say.
I've heard of 60-minute inductions. My first inductions were the Elman induction. So for those of you who don't know, the Elman induction is considered like hypnosis 101, right?
Yeah.
You claim that if you're going to get into hypnosis, you want to at least dive into a little bit, learn the Elman, and you could Google this. There's scripts all over the internet on how to do it. You just follow that. That's what I did. I had a book that I bought that was like 12 pages. That whole book was the Elman induction, yeah. Right? And all you did was, it's a script. You just find somebody and try it on and be like, hey, can I read this to you? And it just works, because what it does is it covers different areas of hypnosis and just naturally leads into the more advanced parts of testing the person, rather than just stopping and then trying something else. It's a natural flow, right? So you learn a lot from that. But yeah, that for me was a 30 to 45 minute induction. that's how I started, and then I learned about rapid inductions or instant inductions.
I learned I actually learned from a mentalist and hypnotist named Spidey, who I know you know of, and I talked to him fairly regularly. He's a good guy. He has a DVD that I got, and that's how I started learning hypnosis, mm-hmm. Stage hypnosis, mm-hmm. And then I adapted that to street hypnosis, and then I adapted that and learn about the therapeutic side.
And once you understand how inductions work, you could pretty make up your own stuff to put people to sleep.
Yeah.
Stuff, you know? And I think that's where, like, you could get creative.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, like, I do inductions that aren't even, that people wouldn't even know are inductions. Not that they're covert, they're just... they just seem like imagination things.
Yeah. Richard Bandler, I saw a video on YouTube of him hypnotizing, I guess, in some sort of seminar or whatever it is. Holy crap, that guy is good. Like, yeah. From the moment he walks up and just him talking, just like he's having a natural conversation with the whole audience. It does not sound like hypnosis whatsoever. It sounds like what we're doing right now, but the entire thing, everything he's saying is on purpose.
Yes.
Which
and
is
then he's looking crazy. For the people who are responding.
Yeah, it was just crazy. Talk about covert. That guy's like a beast. Like, that blew my mind, because I'm like, oh, he's just joking. I'm laughing with him. And the next thing you know, someone's passed out. And I'm like, how the hell did he do that? Like, I never even expected it. He was just talking, and next thing you know, people are, like, passing, like, they're going to sleep.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it could be that you're just so boring that people are going to sleep.
And that's, I mean, that's another way to do it. Like,
I mean, but he's hilarious, by the way.
Yeah, he's hilarious. He's so funny. But boredom is another way to put someone into a hypnotic state.
Yeah, so if you want other hypnosis, get very boring.
That's why daydreaming happens. Daydreaming is a hypnotic state.
It is. It's also kind of why the term in road, like when you're driving, they call it highway hypnosis.
Yep.
Right? It's because, you know, repetition is hypnotic.
Yeah.
So, you know, you see all these trees and signs passing you all the time. Unconsciously, it's going to put you to sleep.
Yeah.
I want to cover certain things. So people who have anxiety, what tips would you have?
So something you can work on little by little is, I mentioned it before, is tapping. Tapping works very well with anxiety, works very well with physical pain.
And when you see tapping, what's that?
So tapping is a technique that goes back centuries, and it's getting some more recognition now than it's gotten in the past. And it's pretty much just tapping certain points on the body, and it's what it's supposed to do and does in certain cases when you are, you know, focused enough on that and have that moment to focus on it, is kind of release this anxiety. And there's I have a what I call cheat sheets. I have a free cheat sheet on tapping, or you can just look it up on YouTube or Google and you'll find stuff on it. And it takes maybe like 2 minutes to do, 1 minute to do, depending on how long you want to do it. I mean, you could do it for like 30 minutes if you want, but if you want to do like one round, it could probably just take 1 or 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And you just go like, there's points on the head, there's points on the chest, there's points on your hand and wrist and stuff. And it helps relieve the anxiety a lot. And you can do this. I recommend doing it first thing when you wake up, last thing before you go to sleep, and whenever you need to throughout the day, whenever that anxiety gets too high.
So is it almost like conditioning yourself? Would you say that?
It's almost like conditioning yourself, but in some cases the tapping works to the extent of just eliminating the symptom altogether. So it is and it isn't, because there are cases where people who have had chronic pain do tapping and then it's gone.
Oh, okay. And what's another one that you would think could help people like that?
So this one's really good. This is called spinning. I learned this from my instructor, David Snyder, who love to death, love everything he does, everything he, all his work and everything, a lot of it is free. But again, don't do certain techniques unless you know exactly what you're doing with them. This one I'll walk you through real quick. Just, let's say anxiety, think about a thing that makes you anxious and associate with a color. Let's say yellow. And with your eyes closed or open, whatever it's easier for you, imagine where that color is. It may be chest, maybe in the legs, maybe in the arm, wherever. Let's say it's in the arm. Physically, with your hand, reach in your body and pull it out, and then scan your body again to see if it may be in the same spot, it may be somewhere different, or it may be gone, and that's it. If it's gone, and that's it, and that's all there is in front of you, then continue. If not, then repeat the process until you have it all in front of you. Once you do, mold it into a ball and notice which direction it's spinning, clockwise or counterclockwise. Whatever way it's spinning, if the direction it's spinning makes you feel good, spin it faster. If it doesn't, spin it the opposite direction. And you'll notice that the faster it spins, the better that feeling will feel. And in fact, that color changes to a better color. And just think about the color that it changes to, the better color. And eventually it'll take on a life of its own. So you don't even have to spin it anymore. It just keeps spinning on its own. And then just take that ball of energy and put it right back where it came from. And you'll feel that change that you just made outside your body and putting it inside your body. And that will help you immensely as well.
Interesting. Yeah, that I've heard of that. I remember I came across it a long time ago, and that's called spinning.
Yeah.
So basically, just to reiterate, you're first focusing on where that feeling is, where it's coming from. So it could be coming from a certain part of your body, your chest. Just focus on where you feel it the most, right? Or where it's coming from.
First impression.
Yeah, yeah. And then once you've pinpointed that in your mind and in your body, then you're physically, like, you're actually going to take your hand, go to that part of the body, and, like, quote unquote, move that energy out from that spot and hold it in your hand in front of you, correct? And you're visualizing this as you do this, correct? So, because you want to see everything. And then you're going to go back into your body and scan your whole body and try to find other spots that you think it's making that, creating that feeling that's making you worried. And you're repeating that process over and over again until you've covered, until you don't find it anymore, correct? Now you have it all in front of you. Right. Okay. And then from there, you're just, you know, changing how that feels in front of you there, and then putting it back where it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
Cool. Interesting. Yeah. No, I think that one's a really good one. Kind of reminds me of the whole, what's it called? I don't remember the exact name, the technique for it, but it's like the movie, I'd call it the movie theater technique, where you have them sit down and play back a memory or someone they don't like. Could be someone from work you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, where I do this a lot.
Yeah, it's really effective, actually. I've done it when I learned it, and it's really helped understand and remove certain feelings about people and situations, and also kind of see from a third person perspective.
I do this with people who have experienced trauma of some kind, because when you do, because that's essentially what that is age regression. And you never want someone to relive the trauma. And so what that technique does, it allows them to relive the trauma without reliving it. So they dissociate from the trauma itself.
Yeah. Yeah, you're disassociating yourself from, by watching it in your mind like a movie theater. Like you're watching. I know Bandler uses this a lot in his clients and everything, where he would tell them to, where do you see it? Is it far or is it close? Because if it's close to you, right? So if the person you like and you see them in your mind and you see them positioned in a certain, like, close to you, that's the starting point, you know? So, you know, whenever you see this person or something or somebody that makes you feel upset or whatever, that's where they're positioned in your mind. He would usually say, push them back further. And how does that feel? And gauge it, right? Always constantly gauge your feeling on that, right? So you push that image back and then gauge how that feels. If you started at a 9 and you pushed it back and now it's a 5, push it further back, right? And then I've even seen it go further of having I used to do this with people, my friends. I would tell them to imagine holding a remote control on their lap while watching this movie. And on this control, there's 2 knobs, right? One for color and one for sound, right? And one for distance, but depends what you want to do. You have fun with it, right? But you would tell them, okay, so you're playing the movie. How does it make you feel from 1 to 10? That would tell me how to gauge if it's working or not, right? So if they say, oh, I'm thinking of this person that makes me feel upset or whatever. Well, from 1 to 10, how does it make you feel? Write that number down, right? And then see that remote control, and I want you to, can you hear the sounds? Yeah. Can you hear can you see the colors? And can you see it vividly in front of you? Yeah. Push it further back and turn the knob over so the picture moves farther and farther, or shrink the image, and then change it black and white. Change the sound, make it funnier, change it to something funny, right? So whenever you hear them speak, now it's hilarious, right? And you just keep changing how you're perceiving them in the movie theater. So now you, and then I usually have a button that says locked in, right? So when they got it to a point where I asked them, now from 1 to 10, when you see this person in front of you, how does it make you feel? If I see anything less than a 5, I say, oh, that's awesome. Well, why don't we lock that in, right? And then press the button on the controller, and when they press the button, I'm like, great, now that feeling is locked in, and that's the suggestion. So So where can people find you? I want you to, you know, shamelessly promote yourself right now. Like, where do people find you?
People can find me on Instagram at I Hate Wands, like a magic wand. Go to my website, ihatewands.com. There's a tab there that links you to my hypnotherapy called Hypnosis for Change. And I mean, I do all sorts of sessions for anything from physical pain to stress, anxiety, PTSD, sexuality, whatever. There's no real limit on that. Also do shows, hypnosis and magic shows, specialize in close-up magic with cards, coins, mentalism, borrowed objects. And I do street close-up hypnosis as well as stage hypnosis.
All right, so a million things.
Million things.
Awesome.
Cool. And we didn't even get to talk about photography.
Oh, yeah.
That'll be for part two.
Cool, man. Well, it was cool having you, my friend. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, of course. You know? No problem. Richie boy.
Oh, God. All right, guys. So thanks for joining in on this episode of Not Just Magic. And I will see you on the next one.
Bye, John.